So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
That's right, Doc Young, Les Thatcher here with you, Wrestling Weekly. It's the last show of the year. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, before we do anything, I do want to say happy birthday to a very good friend of mine. We go hunting together, Les.
We do.
Yes.
Who are we?
Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's Stone Cold's birthday today.
To remind Steve to shoot you.
Well, we actually didn't go hunting. He left me out in the country once.
You know, I was thinking, with the holiday spirit in mind, what to get you for Christmas.
Oh, boy.
That's not the complete library of Girls Gone Wild.
The best of GLOW.
Or the the best of WWF / E lingerie matches.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know what to get you, Les Thatcher. I have no idea.
A blank check, Doc. That'll
work. We got a great show for you guys tonight.
Hey, you know, and we're going to have to get out about 5 before the hour, right? Because
right.
We've got a pay-per-view and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So on the front end, and so I don't forget, in case we run out of time, we've got two good guests tonight. I want to wish all the listeners and everybody in the chat room happy holiday season. We're coming back January the 8th.
Yes.
With a recap of the year with hopefully all of our columnists, Bruce Mitchell, Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and the gang.
The whole gang's going to be here.
Hail, the whole gang. And Pete, if we can get him out of that Irish pub.
Yes.
Anyway.
He'll still be in there from New Year's.
Yeah, to recap the year, since Christmas and New Year's do fall on Sunday night, we're just going to take those two nights off docks and get blind running. It'll Christmas, and it'll take him until the 8th to sober up. No, legitimately, it could take those 2 weeks off, but I want to wish everybody a real happy holiday, and thanks for being with us, and we hope to do better for you next year.
Yes, next year is going to be our year. I can feel it.
Okay, and especially, you know, to our fans in the U.K., that's really so cool, and I've got, I'm reading Turning the Tables.
Mm-hmm.
By John Lister about ECW, and I'm just getting into it. Just received it in the mail yesterday, but it's very interesting.
Yes, it's very good so far. We'll have Mr. Lister on the show.
Yeah, and we can talk to Gabe Sapolsky. He's going to be on with us tonight.
Mm-hmm. And we've got from TNA Terry Taylor, behind the scenes man. So it's kind of behind the scenes night tonight.
All right.
Let's get into it. Let's get into some news.
Okay. You know, I've been kind of out of the mix, so you throw it out there, and I'm sure I'll have an opinion.
All righty, let's start it off with the main story of the week. Indie wrestler Slick Wagner Brown was reportedly arrested last Monday in Wallingford, Connecticut, for the alleged assault and battery of his ex-girlfriend April Hunter. Brown is currently being held on bond on a possible attempted murder charge, as according to reports, he held her at knife point. The altercation was apparently recorded by 911. No further details are available as of this time. Hunter, a former fitness model, has previously worked with WCW, TNA, Ring of Honor, and completed several tours in Japan and Mexico. She confirmed the story on Tuesday and left comments on her official Yahoo group on Thursday.
I read her blog or whatever.
Right.
You know, and I assume, but I didn't see the news piece. I didn't get back into the mix until the first part of this past week.
Right.
And on the computer. And anyway, I don't know Slick. I've been introduced to him, so I have nothing but positive to say because we've just had a couple short conversations and emailed back and forth a couple times. April spent a week with Dr. Tom and I here in Cincinnati, the last week-long WWE Invitational camp that we put on, and got to know her a little bit, and very engaging, good personality, good lady. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just say it. I hate to hear, you know, anything like that, and especially, you know, yeah, if it's going to cost somebody jail time. It's just, you know, and of course you don't hit ladies legitimately. I'm sorry, we promote that. I know.
Right.
And the wrestling business, but no, that's, you know, like I say, that's you can't condone that.
Yeah.
For any reason. But you know, I obviously don't know the circumstances, and I'm just sorry to hear that it happened. Again, I've had nothing but positive feedback from both people. So.
Absolutely. Do wish April and Slick the best. Joey Styles' picture has been removed from OneWrestling.com. It's unknown why at this time, but it may have something to do with him signing on as a full-time employee of WWE. And we all know WWE is a stronger version to wrestling news websites.
Well, you know, and very possibly, since they do have a website, if he is still the owner or columnist on a, you know, another major site, then he is competition.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, to the company is paying him, and I'm sure if he's given up his full time job in advertising, which he's had for a long time, and Dax just relocated to Atlanta recently, I guess what the last year or so,
mm-hmm.
You know, I would assume that dollar wise he's happy if he signed a long term deal.
Absolutely.
You know, so you know, I would guess that he's either sold or he's a silent partner, you know, on Wrestling One now.
Yeah.
Again, you know, but it's, I think, a business move, which WWE probably instituted, you know. But again, he's got a good long-term contract and it's paying for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. At last Tuesday's TNA Impact taping in Orlando, Florida, former WWE head referee Dave Hebner made his debut for the company during a tag team match between the Diamonds in the Rough and Team 3D. Hebner was easily WWE's most popular referee, as he was the official involved in the Montreal Screwjob. Even 8 years later, up until his release, Hebner would frequently receive "You Screwed Brett" chants from the audience when in Canada.
I hate to, at this advanced stage of the dementia that I'm in, Doc, to correct you, but it was Earl Hebner.
Okay, I'm getting conflicting reports that it was Earl.
Well,
or
you
Dave.
Get all the conflicting reports you want, but it was Earl.
Okay.
That was in the match in Montreal.
Can you tell these guys apart?
When I could stand them, well, I tell you what, I've worked with both of them, and there was a time that I really couldn't, but I teased him. Dave, since he had been less active than, you know, than Earl, he was just a, you know, an agent and worked behind the scenes.
Right.
I said, well, you're a little heavier now, so that's the way I can tell.
I can't.
Dave and I, well, I worked, like I say, I worked with both of them. They broke in up in Richmond, Virginia, for Joe Murdoch, who was promoter there. And they've been around the business forever, too. But anyway, Dave came into Knoxville when Ric Flair, Jimmy Crockett Jr., and Blackjack Mulligan owned the territory. And I was producing the TV, and Kevin Sullivan was doing the booking. We were doing the TVs together. Dave lived in the same apartment complex that I did, and we worked together there. I got to know him real well. I hear the stories again. I don't know both sides or either side of that, for a matter of fact. You know, but again, I've had nothing but positive with both those guys.
Okay, so was Earl the referee in the Montreal Screwjob?
Earl was the referee in Montreal, yes.
And Dave is the referee.
Dave was a referee, yes, but in the last number of years, and I'm not sure how far back it goes, probably 5-6 years, excuse me, Dave has just been working behind the scenes as an agent.
Right. Okay. I get them mixed up. I'm getting their names mixed up, actually. But it was Dave Hebner that made his debut.
Okay. Well, then it wasn't the Montreal guy.
Right. So I said all that other stuff for nothing.
Whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. But
cool.
Well, you know, that's what, you know, if he gets, you know, if he's happy with it, you know, he was a good referee. Both those guys
mm-hmm.
were good to work with. Good referees are like good workers. You know, there's not one on every street corner.
Yeah. According to MTV.com, former WWE champion and Fozzy lead singer Chris Jericho has just signed a book deal to write his memoir. The book, called A Lion's Tale, will focus on his formative years in the wrestling business.
And all
that's,
right.
That's big news. Another autobiography, this time by Chris Jericho.
Yeah, cool. Chris, good guy.
Yeah.
He first came to the States. He and Lance Storm came into Smokey. And Cornette thought we had a real, you know, money team on our hands. And they were ahead of their time or just in that sector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just, I mean, and they worked their butts off. And, but yeah, I've known Chris since he first came to the States. Good guy. I really like him.
Maybe he'll write about you in his book.
Yeah, right.
Winnie, Les Thatcher, when are you going to write an autobiography?
When all my enemies and my friends are dead. and I can, when you talk about a shoot interview and then I tell the truth.
You can tell it all.
There'll be no divorces, no. Nobody wanting to murder me.
It's feared that OVW champion Matt Capitelli has a brain tumor.
I heard that. You know, that's so sad because he had a broken leg earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Broken fibula, bunch of concussions, blew out his knee. He's had a lot in the last couple years.
And I guess they were just getting ready to move him up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really sad.
He was taken to the hospital after the OVW TV tapings on Wednesday. After receiving a stiff shot to the head, he'll be undergoing a series of tests to determine whether the tumor is malignant or not. Capitelli, along with John Hennigan, now known as Johnny Nitro of M&M, were awarded the WWE contracts in 2003 for winning the Tough Enough competition. So it's a sad story, and we hope that Matt's going to be okay, and that it's benign.
Yes, let's hope that, and you know, and especially, you know, that he's healthy. Forget the break.
Right.
Know? I mean, but let's hope that comes too. But the main thing is his health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that everything's cool with it. Yeah, let's hope. And man, he's had some roadblocks. If he gets past this one, he deserves a break.
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%. Here's our last story. Apparently, the latest game to pass time in the TNA locker room is to sneak up behind someone and slap them as hard as you can in the face. This is weird.
In the face?
In the face. Supposedly, Samoa Joe hit David Young so hard recently at a TV taping that the athletic trainer had to realign his jaw.
Wow.
So, I remember doing stuff like that.
I'm going to give me a catcher's mask if I ever go into the TNA locker room.
I know.
I've heard some silly games in 45 years, but that's a little bit destructive, actually.
I hung around a group of wild boys in my teens, and we used to pass the time by heating up kitchen utensils on the stove.
Yeah.
And then when you weren't looking, like, brand each other.
Oh, sounds cool.
Yeah, my scars have just gone away from my teenage years. They're pretty
much
gone.
Self abuse.
So I don't want to give the TNA boys any ideas or anything like that.
No, absolutely not. Well, I just flash back and think of some guys that wouldn't have said too well. You know, it wouldn't last. The game wouldn't last too long with these guys.
No.
I mean, okay, whatever. I could say is save your testosterone for the ring.
Exactly. We've got a great show for you guys coming up tonight. We are going to have, from Ring of Honor, the booker, the man behind the scenes, Gabe Sapolsky, is going to be on the show. Also, Terry Taylor from TNA, the man behind the scenes there, basically, talent relations.
And let's don't forget what a great wrestling career he had, too.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking about that. And so get your questions ready, because we're going to have all that good stuff coming up for you here on Wrestling Weekly in just a little bit.
And let's reiterate that we're taking Christmas off, New Year's off, and we're back January the 8th with a recap of 05.
Yes, the next 2 weeks going to be off. January 8th is going to be the big year-end review show.
Yep, I'm going to try to have all our columnists on from Hot Topics, plus yours truly and the great Doctor.
Well, thank you, Les. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
We are going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, we are going to have... what do you want to do? Do you want to get Gabe Sapolsky on now? Or do you want to go and ahead and review Armageddon before we do that?
Well, we got to do our Armageddon, do we not?
Yes.
All right, well, then let's get on with that, and then we can hit Gabe, and when we get out of Gabe, take commercial, recap a little bit, and then get Terry right on the line. How's that?
Sounds like a good show.
Okay.
All right, you're the man, Les.
No, well, not hardly, Doc.
We're going to take a quick break, guys. We'll be right back here on Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. It's not even New Year's yet, and I'm already stuttering. We'll be back after this.
I'll not give you any more compliments.
We know you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Doc Young, Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. You know, it's actually a lot of people's birthdays today, Les.
A lot of people's birthdays? I'm sure a lot of people were born today, yes. I venture to say that's even at a wild guess, Doc. You probably hit the nail on it.
That's not what I meant.
Okay. Whatever.
Let's move on. You know that's not what I meant. But anyway.
Okay. Who else, Doc, was born today? How's that?
No, you ruined it now. We're moving on.
All right.
Armageddon is tonight.
Yes.
It's going to be the big Hell in a Cell match, and that's going to be the main event for the show tonight. Let's go over some of the matches and pick our winners and losers.
Okay.
And find out. This is going to count for next year. Now, we said that we were going to keep score.
You're writing this down, right?
Starting next year, yes. I'm going to write these down.
Okay.
And we'll see, who can predict the most matches in 2006.
Who is the great Karnak of those six?
Exactly.
On Wrestling Week. We got you. Okay.
Now, this is going to be a tough one because it's a SmackDown one. And they're a little harder to predict,
okay. Basically.
But one of the matches is going to be JBL versus Matt Hardy.
Okay. I see JBL over.
I do, too. I can't see Matt.
Well, I think, you know, if it's done right, when I say that, I don't mean it in any disparaging way towards Matt, but I just, he's good, young, what we call white meat baby face,
mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of the Tommy Rich variety, and he can afford to lose if it's done properly.
If it's done properly.
Yeah, if it's done properly, yes. Which is, you know, which is not to say it will be or it won't be, but I mean,
exactly.
that's the key, you know, to keeping, and a good worker can get somebody else over and still maintain, you know, the greatest course of that is Flair over the years,
uh-huh.
You know, and guys like Steamboat, Harley Race, you know, in the same category.
Longevity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm also going to go with JBL. I think JBL needs the win more than Matt Hardy does right now, especially since.
Well, I think they need to establish, when they're doing the cross promotion, Bradshaw came across sort of as a baby face,
mm-hmm.
Right? So,
right.
So they've got to get him back, unless that's the way they're going with him, and I don't think right now they can afford to.
No, I don't think so. Not at this point in time.
Okay.
Let's see. Cruiserweight champion Juventud Guerrera versus Kid Cash.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Cash is, I mean, they're jumping him like now,
mm-hmm.
Into this. I don't know if that's indication that they're going to try and put the strap on him. I don't know because if I were writing or booking the Cruiserweight division, I'd do it entirely different because they don't look at it as a first rate storyline thing anyway, you know,
right.
or where they're actually going with it, as you can see from past, you know, results of how the belt's been passed around and just kind of indiscriminately.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, you know, Hoovy, if you can handle him, is a hell of a worker. And, you know, it depends on, you know, I guess if he's the doghouse or he's not. And Cash was the problem child of TNA.
Exactly. I don't see it coming out well.
This is kind of like Mr. Crotter's class.
But I think they're going to give Kid Cash a push. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say upset.
Cash. Well, maybe. You know, that's possible. Okay. I'll play devil's advocate. I'll take Hoovy.
All righty. Booker T versus Chris Benoit. This is going to be, I think, the third match of the set
of
the series?
No, this is the fourth.
This is the fourth. Okay.
Yeah, this is a must win. It's obvious Benoit either wins it or, you know, all the talk about the contract, his contract being up. Unless that were the case, I can't imagine him putting, and again, no disrespect to Book, him. I think he, since he's turned heel, he and Charmelle are doing a hell of a job. You know, it's really upped his game, and she works that corner really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris has got to win this one otherwise. I mean, there's no upward reason to cut him off four straight for any reason other than he's leaving the company.
Right.
You know, which, again, there's no indication of that. I just know that's the rumor that everybody's talking about, you know.
The only time I've seen something like that where it's, what, 2 out of 3 falls or 2 out of 3 matches that didn't go the distance was when the Radicals first came into WWE.
Yeah.
And Eddie Guerrero injured himself in that second match and had to be pinned, and they went ahead and had the third match anyway.
Yeah.
So, of course, we're both going to go with Chris Benoit, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's all, like I say, short of something that nobody else is aware of, you know, he's got to.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to win this one.
WWE Tag Team Champions Batista and Rey Mysterio versus the World Tag Team Champions Big Show and Kane in an interpromotional match.
Here are four guys who I have nothing but respect for.
Mm-hmm.
I know all four very well. They shouldn't be in this position, and I don't mean that in any disparaging way either. It's just that they don't need the tag team belts. One, Batista's the heavyweight champion.
Right.
Kane and Sho have been to the, you know, that have worked top level pay per views. Ray has proven his merit. Ray was somebody else as a tag partner, and again, not taking away from Batista, but he's as a heavyweight champion. Plus, he needs to rehab the lat. But all I can see tonight is it's almost got, because of Batista being the heavyweight champion, that they've almost got to go over. Plus, it's a SmackDown pay-per-view,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that only makes sense to me. But then who said it needs to make sense?
Right.
But that would be my pick. But Ray is going to be the ball in the pinball machine tonight. He's got to be.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and go against you on this one. And here's why.
Okay.
Yes, I do have a reason this time.
All right.
No, but this is part of the whole SmackDown versus Raw thing, and Raw has been getting their butts kicked as far as interpromotional matches and things of the like. When the two get together, SmackDown usually comes on top. I think this time Raw is going to come out on top.
Okay. Well, you could be right.
Even things out a little bit.
You could be right.
Eminem versus Psychosis and Super Crazy.
Well, I would put Eminem over. I think long term they've got more of an upside. The other two guys are solid workers. It's just how long that that's not to say they won't keep them around, but I think as far as using them higher on the card, I think the Eminem team is has probably got more shelf life in terms of that. Although I have nothing against Crazy and Psychosis at all.
Right. They sure do, and I agree with you on that.
Well, they're fresher for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that the Psychosis and Crazy, or even Juventud for that matter, have been grounded a bit due to some restrictions on the cruiserweights. So what you see out of them in Mexico, you're not going to see here anyway.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me Eminem's going to need this win after losing the belts to get some of their heat.
Yeah.
Back.
Yeah, I do believe.
So I'm going to go with you on that one with Eminem. And the main event of the card is going to be Randy Orton versus The Undertaker in that big Hell in a Cell match.
How is Randy going to lose this one?
I don't know.
But he's almost got to. I mean, Taker's almost got to win this one.
He really does, unless they're really going to push Randy to the moon.
Well, I think that's apparent that that's going to happen at some point. I just don't think this is that point.
Right.
And again, I could be wrong. You know, that's just my, my thought process. I almost think Taker's got to win it.
I would too. I'm going to go with Taker on that because I feel he needs it. He's been really getting his butt kicked, basically.
Well, I think they've pulled this thing along. I don't know where how much longer they can go with this particular program. I think they've milked it pretty dry at mm-hmm. this point. There's not a lot more you can do.
Right.
We've done caskets. Now Hell in the Cell, one thing and another. It's gone through all these supernatural lightning bolts and
yeah.
a sundry talking caskets and what have you.
Don't forget the possessions.
Yes. I think it's pretty, but Taker, this is kind of his match. And I think long term, Randy's got to work for some other people anyway.
Yeah.
Some of the younger baby faces.
Yeah.
No offense to, Mark Callis is a guy. Talk about longevity.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a case. He's been, that's the other thing. People talk about the drug testing and checking the cardiovascular health and so forth and so on, due to Eddie's passing and one thing another. But here's a guy who has taken the time to take time away.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to be dogging it because he's not that kind of guy. And that's why his longevity health-wise, he's had his injuries and stuff, but he doesn't, play brave and rush himself back, and he takes, and he's taking care of what he's got.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great deal of his longevity, too.
Really is.
Yeah.
Armageddon starting at 8 o'clock Eastern, right when we go off the air tonight, only on pay-per-view, so check it out. We are going to take a break now. When we come back, we've got from Ring of Honor, it's Gabe Sapolsky on Wrestling Weekly after this, guys. We're going to take a quick break. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. See you in a bit.
We know you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. It's been a good week as far as wrestling because nothing really bad has happened yet, Les. Nothing too bad has happened.
Nothing bad has happened at all that I'm aware of.
Well, yes. We have a couple stories that weren't very good.
Yeah, well, okay, but that's, I hate to say it. It's just typical week of professional wrestling.
Yeah, sometimes no news is good news.
Exactly.
On the line right now, we've got from Ring of Honor, Gabe Sapolsky. Gabe, I want to thank you for finally being on the show.
Thank you very much.
We've been looking forward to having you on the show for quite a while.
Yeah, you guys probably thought that I was a big no-shower of everything, but glad to finally be here. So,
I know how you famous guys get.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Doc, I'm going to tell you, this guy has an old school mentality when it comes to booking. He's one of my favorites, honest to God. And of course he mentored with Paul E.
Mm-hmm.
Back in ECW. Oh, by the way, I'm reading Turning the Tables. Have you read that, Gabe?
I have a copy, but I haven't read it. But okay. It looks like, was that the book? It looks like the guy just took a lot of stuff from the Observer and Torch and put it to a book, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. From England.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the public record is that you're owed $1,400.
Yeah. I'll let that slide, though. I consider that's like ECW for me was like going to college and grad school for wrestling, so I consider that the tuition fee.
I heard
so.
That.
No big deal.
I heard. And then the other guy who I think is a great mind, he's just coming to work, is the commissioner of Ring of Honor. That's Jim Cornette.
Yeah, Cornette's going to be a huge addition for us next year. I'm definitely looking forward to working with him, and I'm also looking forward to the fact that I will be able to brag about that I was that I've learned from both Heyman and Cornette. So that's going to be that's something that I'm very much looking forward to.
That is awesome.
If you were a horse, we'd enter you in a Kentucky Derby with that kind of favorite. Gabe, you guys had a big show last night. You said before we came on the air that it might be be the best of the year.
Yeah, I mean, in the ring, it was a great show, and the guys always busted their asses as always, and we got across if we needed to, and we really, we did a lot of things to set up the first few months of 2006, which is, you know, very important to do to end the year, especially now that we have a month off. So we got all our angles in motion, and business-wise, it might have been our best show of the year. I don't know what the final numbers are, but if it wasn't the best show of the year, it's definitely one of the top three of the year. It was great. We had a new building in Jersey. New Jersey has kind of been a problem area for us since we lost the Rexplex earlier in the year. The Rexplex was like our Madison Square Garden, and the building went out of business. And since that time, we bounced around for a few buildings in New Jersey, and pretty much they were disasters business-wise. The locations weren't there, and they weren't the right buildings for us. And now with this Edison building and the crowd that we drew last night, it looks like that we finally have a new home in New Jersey, and we're back to where business was, you know, when we were at the Rexplex, which is a huge thing for us going into 2006.
Let me ask you about 2006. Do you plan to expand your area of where you're putting your shows on? I guess Dayton is probably as far southwest as you get, right?
We're in Chicago and Detroit now.
Yeah.
But there's no huge plans right now. I mean, Detroit's the next city that we ran there once in November. That was our first time there, and we didn't have a huge crowd, but it was a lively crowd, and it was a good enough crowd to where we feel that we have something to build on there. So Detroit's the next market that we're looking at. I mean, we've had to pull back in a couple of markets. Boston has been kind of replaced by Connecticut. We tried Buffalo last year, and that just we had the great fans there, but the trouble is that there weren't nearly enough of them, so Buffalo didn't really work out. So we're actually pulling back from a few markets, but that doesn't mean that we're running less shows, because we're looking at Detroit. We're looking at a few other markets that I don't want to get into at this moment, but I mean, as far as like a huge expansion or anything like that, like it's not going to happen. Where this year was an important year for us. 2005 was the year where we really became a self-sufficient company. We're not over the hump of being self-sufficient to the point where we're making a big profit or really any kind of a profit, but we are self-sufficient, but it's still a month-to-month deal with us. So I feel that was a great accomplishment for 2005. I'm very proud of that fact. So 2006, we basically just want to keep that going, and you know, the whole story is staying in business. And as long as you're in business, without having an investor needing to pour, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars into your company, then you're doing well in my book. So you know, I don't think you're going to see any expansion, but you're not going to see a decrease of shows. You'll probably see us run about the same amount of shows next year that we ran this year, with, you know, within two or three shows.
Well, I think that's part of your success story too. Is like you say, you're not outgrowing or growing too fast in so many. I mean, not just the wrestling business, but you know, business in general. In this day and age, they appear overnight and they're gone because they out expand themselves.
Yeah, well, we're not in a race with anybody. So to me, the primary goal is staying in business. And it's great that TNA's got the TV. We're not in a race with them. We're not in a race with any other indies. We're basically here to do what we need to do to stay in business. And if that means staying on this underground level, that's great. One thing you'll notice, I'm not sure if they talk about in that ECW book or not, but it's something that one of the number one lessons I learned coming away from ECW is that Paul Heyman always said they were too big to be small and too small to be big, which was very true. And once you get into that situation, you're doomed. There's no way to survive. So what we are being very careful of is not getting into that situation. And really, to get into something where we're too small to be big and too big to be small, is that's when you start getting into TV and that kind of stuff, and there's no plans for us to do any of that kind of thing.
Well, your whole business plan is built around the marketing of the tapes and DVDs anyway, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what keeps us going. The live shows, you know, we hope to break even on the live shows. It would be great if we made a little money at the live shows, but primarily what everything is to set up is to have the DVD market.
I want to ask you about Shimmer. Are you planning on having any women's matches in Ring of Honor next year?
Yeah, Dave Frazek's been very valuable to Ring of Honor this year. I mean, he's really brought stability to the announcing booth, and he's a great announcer. He's extremely helpful behind the scenes. He's a really good guy, and he's really got his heart into the Shimmer project. He's of course a promoter of Shimmer. So and they're going to do their DVDs through ROHWrestling.com. So you know what promotions will find is that when they do work with us, you know we'll give them a lot of support because obviously if we're selling the product, we want it to move whether it's under the ROH banner or not. So you can expect to see some women's matches, but I mean primarily if we do women's matches, it's just to show people what the Shimmer product is all about, and you know, hopefully get people to buy some of the Shimmer DVDs from us.
Now, how do you think the first tapings went?
I haven't seen them yet. So they happened, I think, 6 weeks ago or so, and right now, unfortunately, the raw footage is sitting down in Florida, where we do our production. But there was kept, you know, the Ring of Honor stuff kept coming up, so the guy we have down there is busy doing that. But I very much look forward to seeing the first Shimmer taping. From what I heard, it really came out awesome. I mean, the whole idea of Shimmer is to promote women's wrestling as a sport and make it serious, and I heard there was like an awesome 25-minute match with Lacey and Daisy Hayes, and I know there's a lot of great talent there. Sarah Del Rey is definitely somebody worth checking out, and I mean, from the whole card definitely has great talent, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the first DVD.
Now, there's rumors going around that you might be stepping down from your booking duties.
that's all from one website that, whatever, I'm not going to get into them, but there's no truth to any of that. There's also rumors that I was trying to get into TNA, which there's no truth to any of that, and there's one rumor after another, and there's nothing to any of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I want to get back into a little bit of your past. How did you get into ECW in the first place?
I was very lucky. I came in pretty much before the internet. So right now, every promotion probably gets 100 emails from people who were in my position back in 94. And basically, ECW was starting out, and I read about it in the Observer, and I wrote Todd Gordon a letter saying, "Hey, I'm gonna be in Philadelphia for my senior year at Temple. I'd like to do a newsletter for you guys as a hobby." And they were begging for people to help them out at that point.
Right.
So Todd, I wrote Todd a very professional letter. I didn't just scribble something down or, you know.
Right,
I
didn't write in crayons or anything.
Yeah. So, you know, Todd gave me the shot. And then I was actually, the timing worked out perfectly because then when I graduated, I there was about a three-month period where I stayed in Philadelphia doing telemarketing or whatever. And, you know, they still needed people to help with flyers or whatever errands needed to be done. And then in January, they opened up the office, and since obviously I'd been around for a year and a half at that point, they gave me the job at the office there, and then I just grew with the company. So it was a combination of timing and just, you know, being there and being there when the company started.
What kind of duties did you have with the newsletter? How did that work?
I mean, it was just something I wrote up, and, you know, we did interviews with the various guys and feature articles, and like I remember one of my first interviews was with Paul Heyman, and it was a very weird interview because he was wearing a cap and he had the cap pulled over his eyes and he didn't make eye contact once during the interview, and it was a very odd thing. And looking back at some of my timing of, you know, when I would go to the guys for interviews or whatever, I'm surprised I lasted as long as I did. And but you know, it was that kind of thing, and then basically that kind of morphed into the live event program which I sold and I wrote and published and everything, so it was like one thing led to another in ECW, and one job led to the next job.
It was a great learning place for you, right?
That's where I learned everything from. I mean, in ECW, I kept my mouth shut all the time, and I just listened to everybody. And, you know, there's so many great guys that came through there, like, you know, Raven I learned a lot from, Shane Douglas I learned a lot from, Terry Funk, Kevin Sullivan. I mean, the list, you know, everyone knows who is in ECW, and the whole time I just sat there and I kept my mouth shut and listened. And it was part of the, it was funny because, like, we do a lot of the shoot interviews with, you know, the guys from the earlier eras, and they learned everything from driving town to town, it seems like, you know, driving town to town and talking about their matches and in the old territory days. And, you know, I had the opportunity to drive with Raven for a little bit and way back, and I just kept my mouth shut, and he would get peeled up and just talk and talk and talk. And so I would just sit, but everything he was saying was good, so I'd just sit there and listen.
Right.
And And, you know, and Paul Heyman, that's who I pretty much learned, you know, practically everything from, is he would just call up and I would just sit there, you know, he'd call at 3 a.m. and I would just sit there on the phone and just listen to him talk. And it was, that's where I learned everything from. So it was definitely an invaluable learning experience. And it was probably, I mean, when you look at it from the way the guys described the old territories and how they used to learn from the territories, the ECW is probably the last territory that there really was to learn like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it's carried over to your locker room. We were talking about before we went on the air is when Steamer was working with you. I remember you telling me, he said, you know, I don't care if he goes out to the ring or not. He's valuable in the locker room. And now with Cornette joining the crew, you've got two solid heads that can help the kids and critique their matches and keep them focused and pointed in the right direction.
Yeah, Ricky Steamboat was really invaluable. I mean, for me, the fact that I was never a performer, it limits what I'm able to express to the guys, you know, as far as what they do in the ring and everything. But for a guy like Steamboat or Cornette, you're dealing with two of the greatest performers of all time, and they can really articulate and really, more importantly, like show the guys how to do the stuff in the ring. And Steamboat was really invaluable when it came to that, and you saw the improvement in guys. You know, Steamboat was one of my favorite stories in Ring of Honor history. And that, as you know, Les, he came in as like a one-shot deal,
right?
You know, as to do a referee thing, and it was only because he was already in town that day for a convention, and you know, he came in, he did his job, and he was great about it. He worked his ass off, and then he left. And then we negotiated to keep bringing Steamboat in because he was the right kind of guy that we needed at the time. You know, he brings an aura of respect to the product, and we needed that aura of respect then. But each time he came back, he would get a little more involved with the guys. He'd be in a little bit better shape, and you know, he kept coming back. And by the time he went to WWE, he was watching all the matches on the card. The guys would come through the curtain. He would give them invaluable advice. And again, what I would do is I went back to my ECW mentality of just keeping my mouth shut and listening. Is I would go every time that he would talk to the guys after the match, and I would sit there right with the guys and listen to everything that Steamboat had to say and pick up as much as I could. Whereas now I had that knowledge that I could pass on to you know, when he was gone. So I learned a tremendous amount from him as well. And it was just great seeing how every show he got more and more enthusiastic about teaching the guys. And you would really notice the difference in the ring. Like, it was a lot of small and subtle things, and you would notice that the guys, some of them learned it, some of them didn't, some of them still remember today, some of them forgot what he told them. But even if what 15% of what Steve-O said is actually registering through and stays with the guys to this current day, that's their 15% better than they were before. So it's absolutely invaluable. But since Steamboat's left, we really haven't had that kind of veteran that's been consistently there. And plus, as you know, Steamboat's as knowledgeable as they come. I mean,
right.
I consider Steamboat, the way that Paul Heyman is a booking genius, I consider Steamboat to be a genius as far as being in the ring, as far as subtle things to do and everything. And there's not a lot of guys that have that kind of knowledge and are able to express it the way that Steamboat can. And now with Cornette coming in, we do have that veteran again who's made a living teaching guys how to work. And Cornette's the kind of guy that once he gets in and really starts, he's not going to, I don't know how many live shows he's going to be at. It's going to be a lot more than he was in this past year, and there's definitely plans for him to make some trips out east, and we're in the Midwest a lot. So he'll be at a good portion of the live shows. But one thing he'll definitely be able to do is do the same thing Steamboat was, is talk to the guys when they come through the curtain. And again, I'll be right there listening to everything and trying to pick up whatever I can. So, you know, Cornette's going to fill a very valuable hole backstage for us as far as being a veteran that can teach the younger guys.
You know, one of the neat things, I think one of the nicest compliments that Ring of Honor could have is basically you become a stopping off place for guys moving on to TNA or WWE or Japan or whatever. And I say compliment because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what the goal is for Ring of Honor, too. I mean, I'm a definite realist where I know that being at the level that we're at and the level that we're probably always going to be at, we're not going to be a place for where guys are going to be able to make a living. I mean, it'd be great. I would love to get to the point where we would have a core roster of three guys that could make a living off us, but we're not even at that point yet. But we are, I mean, ECW was a stepping stone for a lot of people to WWE and WCW, and ECW was a million times bigger than we were. So we're always going to be that place to make the name. So what my goal has always been with Ring of Honor is not to focus on the stars. You know, like if you notice on ROHWrestling.com, we don't have a roster page. We have roster videos, which is just to highlight the talent and get people to see the footage and everything. But I don't do a roster page on purpose on the website because Ring of Honor doesn't have stars. What Ring of Honor is a melting pot of all the best talent. And the goal is not to bring in wrestlers who have already made their name. I mean, obviously we use some name guys, but what we want is like the young, hungry guys that need to make their name and that are starting off at the bottom and they really want to get their reputation going, because you're always going to get the best effort out of those guys. Those guys are always really going to bust their asses to really shine on the shows, because their future is at stake. You know, they're trying to make their reputations. So we're always going to be about highlighting those guys and bringing in those guys. And that's why having somebody like a Steamboat, when we had him around or a Cornette around, is very important too, because that's just an added bonus for the guys coming in and working for us, is they also get to learn from people like that.
You know, that makes a strong point. I'm glad you brought that up. And if there's any independent workers listening or any of those that intend to be, realize what David just said in terms of work ethic and what you're putting out there. Now, talking about young guys that are hungry, some of my crew that have worked for you, BJ, Collier, Nigel, Stryker, and this new kid, Jason Blade, who Harley and Ricky and I had a chance to work with. And I know why they're all there, because they have the traits that you're talking about.
Yeah, I didn't know you guys trained Jason Blade.
Well, you know, he started with Northeast. But we worked with him 2 years ago at a camp, and then he came down to Harley's for a week, and then I worked with him back in New England again a couple times. Every time the neat thing was with this kid, you would tell him this, this, and this, and you'd see him the next time. You knew he was listening. He was utilizing those things. He was putting on size. He was doing the things necessary to move up.
Yeah, actually, that explains a lot, because the guys that you mentioned, like Jason Blade, he has the same kind of attitude, and BJ Whitmer and Nigel and Matt Stryker and Chad Collier, is those guys, they always come to work hard, they always come to the locker room with a great attitude, they always do what needs to be done in the ring, and I think that's a big compliment to you and your whole crew that trains them, because Jason Blade definitely has those qualities, so that definitely explains it right there.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. The first time we worked with him, Gabe, we did a 3-day camp up in New England. On the third night, he had a show. But he came to the first 2 days, and then he came in for a couple hours in the morning on Saturday, and then he had to make a show elsewhere that night. But the next night, we finished up. The promoters were taking Harley and Ricky and I and our wives to dinner. And when we got to the restaurant, Jason had called one of the promoters on his cell phone, and he was just excited. He said, you know, you tell Ricky and Les and Harley that I had my opponent. We did just the things that I picked up in the camp. And he said, just had the best match I've ever had in my life. You know?
Yep. I can see that. I think Jason Blade is definitely going to be a guy to watch in 2006, and he's going to get every opportunity in the world with us.
Well, that's great, because I think you've got a great learning place. You know, you talk about you don't compare yourself with any other indies. They can't compare themselves. I mean, you honestly have the best indie guys coming through. I mean, I love sitting down to watch your shows. I mean, some of the best matches I've seen in the last few years have been on Ring of Honor.
Thank you very much. And, like, a lot of that has to do with, I mean, part, when I book a guy, I look at 50% their ability in the ring and 50% their attitude. And, like, a lot of the guys that come from your camp, you know, like Collier and Whitmer and Nigel and Stryker and now Jason Blade, I mean, you can't ask for guys with better attitudes. They know how to do business. They, you know, in and out of the ring. They're credits to your locker room. And those are the kind of guys that we look for. I don't look for guys like, name a name, like Teddy Hart, who's going to disrupt your locker room. I stay away from those guys. In order for me to bring in a guy, like, you know, you bring him in, but in order for a guy to really get pushed with us, I have to have a certain level of trust in the guy, because you have to, you know, he has to show up to your shows, and you have to know he's going to be there, and you have to know that if you put a title on him, he's not going to refuse to drop it or anything like that, or, you know, you're not going to get into any of those ego or attitude problems. And Jason Blade's right in the same mold as BJ and Nigel and Stryker and Collier, where they just have the best attitudes. And you know, it's like guys like that, like you bring in and you hope to get a couple of good years out of them or whatever, or have a good run with them. But, I mean, I really hope that all those guys go on to make $1 million, because you just want to see them do well because they deserve it, because they have that work ethic and they have that attitude. And, I mean, they just go above the Call of Duty all the time.
What about somebody like pre-WWE, Kid Cash or Abyss or Sharkboy or Sanjay Dutt? Would you book those?
Yeah, I mean, Abyss is a great guy. We have him in as a semi-regular right now, and Abyss is just a super guy, and he's great to do business with. Kid Cash, a little story with Kid Cash was when I was down in TNA one time, he came up to me because he knew me from ECW, and he was like, hey, you know, I'd like to come in for you guys. And I was like, okay, cool. And he named his price, and it was a little high. And then I was like, well, you know, it's a little high. And he's like, well, you know, it'd just be another indie booking for me anyways. So after he said that to me, why am I going to book a guy when it's just going to be another indie booking for him?
Right.
You know, you're not going to get that extra effort out of the guy. So that was it for him. Sharkboy, he's a cool guy. I've met him a few times. I don't really know him that well at all. But from the couple of times I have met him, he's been a really nice guy, a really professional guy. But it's just a deal where I didn't think that gimmick would fit too well, you know, in ROH.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you haven't seen him. And it's also a matter of, you know, you have to have the right spot for the right guy. You're not going to, you know, Abyss fits him perfectly because we have no one on the roster like him.
Right.
And like, in our Cleveland debut, we had Abyss against Jack Evans, which was, it's a 2.5-minute match, but it was a great match, and we've never had a match like that in Ring of Honor. So, you know, Abyss brings something very unique to the table. And, you know, it was just like with Sharkboy, I think he's a great talent and he's a great guy, but there just wasn't the right spot for him to come in on.
Ring of Honor's not big on gimmicks or anything like that, are they?
No. The number one thing is you can have the best storylines in the world and the best characters in the world and everything, but the bottom line is that wrestling fans that we play to and the hardcore audience, they buy DVDs for great matches. So, you know, first and foremost, obviously we do have angles, we have storylines, we have heels and faces. You know, I put a lot of effort into all those things, as does everyone on the roster. But the bottom line is that the backbone of the promotion is always going to be having great matches, because in the end, that's in what people buy your DVDs for.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You are kind of the middle ground that this business, it's the only one it has right now. When I say that, it's obvious that WWE has leaned more towards the entertainment side of sports entertainment, you know, in recent months.
Yeah, it's not good entertainment either.
If you're looking for a disagreement, you have to go elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, then TNA has got more into the acrobats and the, you know, bringing back the hardcore thing. And I'm thinking, well, where's the middle ground? Well, it's basically you guys.
Yeah. I mean, TNA, I think that they've done a great job with the show. To me, TNA is doing the exact show that they should be doing, which is just, I mean, it's 1 hour, it's breakneck speed, there's not a slow second on the show, and to me, that's exactly what the show needs to be at this point, and I mean, again, that's just my opinion. But, you know, and it's also, you turn on the TNA show, and you see guys, they're diving all over the place, they're doing these moves that you don't see on WWE, they're doing, you know, the hardcore stuff, it's just everything that you won't see on WWE, and you know, it's much more athletic and everything. So,
yeah.
I read a lot of complaints of people saying that TNA need 2 hours, and that at the end of the hour, nothing has an impact, or, you're not left with anything. But to me, it's like, that's the kind of show that they need to have, where it's just an hour and there's not a slow second on the show and there's nothing that loses your attention, and at the end of the hour you wish it was 2 hours. I mean, to me, that's a great sign of the show if people are sitting at the end of the hour and saying, damn, I wish it was another hour. So, you know, TNA is doing the exact product they should.
Yeah.
WWE, on the other hand, whatever, they suck right now.
Well, you know, the hell of it is, then you see Michaels against Benoit, or Michaels against Angle, or God rest his soul, Eddie and Benoit, or Eddie and any damn body. But, you know, and it's like this rose jumps up from amongst these thorns.
Yeah, I mean, they have the guys that can go. There's no, I think Eminem is such a great tag team, and they should be much higher on the card. I mean, they're such a phenomenal act, and I mean, they have the guys that could go, they have the guys that can cut promos, and it's just like, they have everyone in the wrong spots. But again, like, this is coming from a guy who probably watches less than 50% of what WWE puts on TV, and I haven't watched a pay-per-view in 4 or 5 years or something. So, you know, there's probably more educated opinions on the WWE product. But that's just like, I turn on Raw every week, and after a half an hour, it loses my attention. So that's just what I'm going by.
Mm-hmm. I want to take some questions from the chat room. Raven I wants to know, what's the most valuable thing that you've learned and from who?
I mean, there's so many valuable things. You know, obviously it would all go back to Paul Heyman and ECW, where, I mean, the number one thing was you have to be different than everybody else, which is, again, a good compliment from Les saying that we're the middle ground. You know, we're different from TNA, we're different from WWE. So that's definitely the very important thing, is making sure that you're different from everybody else.
I want to ask you about somebody, one of the wrestlers that I'm familiar with is Jimmy Jacobs. What do you think about him?
He's doing a real good job with us. He's been with us for a couple of years now, and he's a very versatile performer. Again, he's a guy that comes into the locker room with a great attitude. He's a guy that's willing to bust his ass to get to the next level. So he's doing real good. We're trying a few different things to him to break him out to the next level. So, you know, hopefully 2006 we do see him break out to the next level.
You mean singles?
It's a singles or in a tag. You know, we're going to keep him off and on with the tag with BJ Whitmer. They have a good big man little thing going there. So, you know, he'll be given some a few opportunities, and hopefully we'll see him break out with one of them.
Are you afraid he might throw one of your belts in the trash?
Yeah. I don't know what that was all about, but I was actually surprised Jimmy did it, but I'm sure he has his issues with Ian Rodden. So, you know, I don't know what they are, but that's none of my business, really.
Right.
He comes into our locker room. He does a great job, and that's what I'm concerned about.
Okay, I can't read this guy's name, MJ. He wants to know where he can get Ring of Honor DVDs.
That's easy, ROHWrestling.com, or you can call 215-781-2500. But I think right now, it might end today, I'm not sure, but we might have a buy three, get one free sale at ROHWrestling.com. But we're always having sales, and we're always, you know, making the product affordable for people. So that's the place to go.
Excellent.
I want to say that if you can get to a live show, please go to a live show. I can't tell you how much I enjoy it, and everyone, this will tell you how hard I am to please.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Southern Indiana shows. Now, I'm not telling you how to book or where to go or anything, but
we will go anywhere we can break even on. So.
Yeah, maybe you should look into Indianapolis or something.
Yeah, well, maybe. So. But yeah, we will go anywhere that we can break even on.
You're doing the Florida promotion too. I mean, you're burning the candle at both ends as it is.
Yeah, well, the FIP promotion I do in Florida is actually, it's like a vacation from ROH for me. So it actually helps refresh me for ROH. Because when you know, in ROH we're playing in front of the smart fans, and they can tell if a spot gets messed up, and they let the wrestlers know about it. In Florida, we go down there, we go to the smallest towns possible, away from all the big cities. There's maybe 3 to 5 smart fans in the audience. The rest of it, we're playing the kids. If a guy messes up a spot, the 10-year-old kids don't know it. And it's a lot of fun. We can get away with, like, basically, I just booked down there. It's all the most cliche, like, old-school angles, but, you know, with a little twist on it, but it's just booked completely differently. And it's very valuable because it actually, the FIP promotion lets me do a lot of things, and then that test them out down there, and then if they work, they happen in ROH. Like CM Punk's whole heel title reign, it happened in FIP first. All those heel tactics happened in FIP first, and it's not like FIP is a minor league or a testing ground or anything. It just allows me to think a different way and do different things, which opens up your mind to different things and lets you experiment somewhat. So, you know, FIP as its own, I really feel can stand alone as a promotion, and I'm 100% behind the product. And again, it's a unique product because basically what we're doing down there is we have the modern wrestlers like Bryan Danielson, and, you know, we had Samoa Joe and Homicide's champion and Punk we had down there, and a lot of guys from ROH we have down there. But Roderick Strong's a big guy down there. But we have what we do is we have those guys, and they're doing old-school wrestling down there. So we have modern wrestlers doing some modern moves, but in an old-school atmosphere, which creates a very unique product. And it's something right now, if we weren't 9 months behind on the DVDs, and the reason Sal, the promoter down there, who does a great job, he works his ass off, but the reason that he is so far behind on the FIP DVDs is because he's the guy who produces the ROH DVDs. so he's always busy doing ROH. But if FIP wasn't 9 months behind, I think that would have a really good buzz about it right now.
So while you're R&R and on booking his shows, he's stressing out and seeing the psychiatrist because
exactly.
He's
so
DVDs, right?
Yep. So he's the one, you know, I do a lot less work for FIP than I do for ROH, so he's... I'm really astonished sometimes at how hard Sal works. I mean, he's setting up the ring before the show. He's driving the ring there. He's picking up the guys at the airport. And then at the end of the night, he's breaking down the ring. He's cleaning up the building. He's dealing with all the money situation. I mean, he does so much down there. It's an absolutely astonishing effort that he puts in. But hopefully, you know, he's got some time off now from ROH because we're going about a month without ROH shows right now. So hopefully he can get some of these FIP DVDs out, because with the next DVD to come out will be the Arcadia show, or the next one to go into production will be the Arcadia show. And that was really a turning point show from us, where we got away from trying to run Tampa and trying to run in front of some of the smart marks and everything, and just said, to heck with it. We're gonna find the smallest town we can find with 800 people in it, and 300 or 400 of them will come out to the wrestling show, and kids come for free, so all the kids will come and have a great time. And it's funny because, like, the style of action, those fans, they don't want to see Ring of Honor high spots or a big stiff match. They want to see heels and baby faces and old school angles. And just an example, like Jimmy Rave, we had a match with him down there. I forget what show it was, but he was sitting there yelling at the fans, and they're yelling back, and there's all this heat, and it was great. And he was punching and kicking and choking the baby face, and the people were getting on him. And then he hit his one move, his gonorrhea move, which is a, you know, one of those modern, fancy ROH kind of moves. And then the place just died on the spot. You could hear a pin drop. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that it is in FIP. But a lot of those, as Les will attest to, a lot of that old school stuff will still work today, and that's why I get to go down to FIP and try something out, and the guys get to try out in the ring, and
you know, that's
we can
what,
bring it to ROH.
Yeah, that's what Harley and Ricky and I have preached when we started EPWT, and like in the manual and everything. It's a blending of of this era and old school into a good art form, and that's basically what you're preaching there.
Yep, and like, the FIP DVD that just came out a few weeks ago was the Bring the Pain one. It has a CM Punk versus Brian Danielson 2 out of 3 falls match on it. And what they did, which is something that you could never do in ROH now, is they went in there and they didn't even talk to each other before the match. Is they called the whole thing in the ring, including the finishes. So, and there's not a lot of guys that can do that now, so it's great that, you know, FIP gives those guys the opportunity to do something like that.
Yeah.
And it was really an incredible match.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story about that. The way the different guys are taught, when the guys from WWF camp in Memphis came into my place, I put Cody Hawk and Lance Kay together because they both had long blonde hair, sort of, you know, appearance like. Well, anyway, the crazy thing was, Cody had taught I taught all my kids from the get go, you know, how to call it in the ring, and Lance didn't know how to call it in the ring, and so he would freak because Cody'd want to call the ring. It's like, he'd say, well, he doesn't want to call anything in the dressing room. And then Cody'd come and say, he wants to call it in the dressing room. We don't do it that way. Anyway, long story short, a year later, when we're out and Lance is dropping the title to Cody, we did our last TV show in Louisville with Jimmy and Danny at OVW. And they just had one heck of a match. So Jimmy, we all came in the back and congratulated him and told Lance, said, yeah, you know, real good match. And he threw out his chase and we called it all in the ring. Right. So if we didn't teach him anything else in the year he was with us, we kind of called it.
That's cool. And I mean, it's very important, you know, for the guys to be able to work that way, because when things go wrong in a match, you see they're able to cover it up and keep moving from there.
Sure. And some of the very best matches are built that way because you're just playing off the feel.
Yeah.
I mean, when I say it's not the people dictating, like when somebody starts saying boring, you get up and start running spots. Mm-hmm. But it's feeling that what you're doing is or is not getting to those people.
Yeah. And, I mean, to me, what those guys have to do in the ring, it's something I could never do, and it's so incredible when you look at, you know, you have the physical side of it, and then you have the whole mental side of it, and you have to have that whole, you know, the guys that are truly great, they have that mental side going on the whole time while they're worrying about the whole physical side of things, and it's just amazing, you know, how much thought process there is, and what you have to do on your feet while you're in that ring.
And you know, Gabe, I'm going to say that just like our conversation tonight is, it tells me too, when you said, well, I know I've never been in the ring, so there's a certain amount of this I don't understand, which is part of your success, I believe, too, because I think too many guys that get in our business today and end up being involved in creative or booking or writing or whatever the hell they want to call it, tend to think, even if they've never taken a bump, that they know everything. And I think there's, you know, you're willing to listen to somebody that you realize has been climbed the mountain in a different manner than you have, and I think that's where a lot of these guys go wrong.
Yeah, well, that again goes back to one of the main Heyman lessons. Was one thing he always instilled in me, and something that he, you know, as far as booking goes, is you have to know the strengths and weaknesses of your talent, and at the same time, you have to know the strengths and weaknesses of yourself. So, you know, I recognize that obviously Ricky Steamboat and Jim Cornette are going to have a lot of insight that I'm not going to be able to have. So I'll sit there and listen and you know, hand the stage over to them. And you know, my goal in Ring of Honor is to have the best possible product. My goal isn't to have everything be my idea or, you know, or everything be my influence. My goal is to have it be the best possible show. So if that comes from many different places, I'm all for it. And it does come from many different places. I mean, there's, you know, everybody on the roster obviously has a great deal of creative input. And it was the same way in ECW, too.
Yeah, and I think that there again speaks volumes on why you're going to succeed and have succeeded up to this point is, mm-hmm. is because of your versatility and realizing your own shortcomings, and I think that's why anybody is successful, yep. at least to a certain degree.
I mean, and as a worker, you have to do the same. You have to know sure. your strengths and weaknesses. If you're a guy, you know, Steve Corino, he's a guy that gets it 100%. He knows that he's not going to go out there and do what Loki does or, you know, do fly all over the ring or anything like that. But then again, he knows what he does well. So he knows how to hide his weaknesses and show his strengths. Tommy Dreamer was a guy that really taught me that, too. I remember one conversation I had with Tommy Dreamer in ECW where he said, you know, you'll never see me stomp somebody. I think it was a stomp. I might have the actual thing wrong. And I was like, well, what is that? And he goes, well, I know that my stomps suck, so I'm never going to stomp anybody in the ring. So, you know, it's just something that everyone really needs to realize what their strengths and weaknesses are and be honest with yourself and put your ego aside, and it's just going to make you and everyone around you better for it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a great Tommy Dreamer moment for me when he and Raven were in the camp here, and PJ was here, and, Christ, I forget who all at that time, Hugh Morris. But anyway, we had one heck of a crew. We did a bar show downtown, and Tommy and Raven were the baby faces against Chet Jablonski, who's now in OVW. It was one of my kids and B.J. Whitmer, and it was a total old-school tag match. Tommy and Scotty called it that way, and they just tore the building down, and you could see Chet and B.J. just glowing because, in truth, it was probably the best match they'd ever had in their lives.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, because they felt the people, and they could feel it flowing, you know, the up and down, the emotional roller coaster, and it was one of the nicest matches I'd seen sometime, too. But, yeah, Tommy's got a good feel for the business.
I mean, Tommy Dreamer has one of the best minds going, and he, yeah, I mean, he, you know, talk about guys that you keep your mouth shut and just listen to. He's one of those guys, and I learned a great deal from him over the years in ECW as well.
Kick Me in the Heel wants to know, would you compare Ring of Honor to Japanese-style wrestling only in the States?
I mean, that's tough to say because I guess there's a lot of different styles in Japan, and honestly, like, up until the last few months, I really never watched. I mean, back in the early 90s, I watched a lot of Japan, but I went through a good seven, eight-year period where I really didn't watch much from Japan. And now I'm trying to educate myself by watching a lot of Dragon Gate because, you know, we've had those guys in and we might have more, and then obviously watching Noah and watching a lot of the Japan groups that we could possibly work with. But I don't think that's really fair. I mean, we do a lot of American things. And again, like, our goal isn't to be like Japanese wrestling or American wrestling. Our goal is to be a unique product. So, you know, you'll see stuff that you would see in Japan. I mean, obviously, the low-key Kenta main event we had last night was straight out of Japan. And the Kenta Kobashi Samoa Joe match we had a few months ago was straight out of Japan. But, I mean, pretty much the goal in ROH is to be unique instead of trying for one style or anything.
R.O. Triple H wants to know, what does Gabe think about AJ working Russo's show and skipping yours?
I understand where AJ was coming from. It was the kind of deal where, and I was talking to somebody last night about it, and they were saying, you know, AJ on the Russo show, it's close to his home. And AJ, he could go 50% on that show. He was saying, you know, he could work a house show match on that show. And he knows when you come to ROH, You can't come and work a house show match in ROH.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't come and give 50% in ROH. So it was that kind of deal, which I understood. And AJ, you know, was fearful that the lip was going to get split open again, and if it got split open again, he was going to need plastic surgery, which
right.
I understand it did happen on Russo's show, which is unfortunate. But, you know, I also don't want that on my head if a guy's coming into our show and he gets disfigured and needs plastic surgery because of it.
Right.
You know, I don't want that on my head, so it's fine.
Raven wants to know, would you ever get in the ring, and if not, have you ever considered it?
No, I have absolutely no talent for in the ring. So, and you know what, even growing up, it's funny, I've never had aspirations to be a wrestler or a manager or a referee or anything. Even growing up, I would, you know, most people sit there growing up and they pretend that they're wrestling, or, you know, they sit there and cut promos or whatever. I always booked out shows, even when I was a little kid. So without even realizing what I, you know, that I was booking out shows, I'd sit there and book out shows.
Mm-hmm.
So booking was always what interests me, and never being a performer, I was always a behind-the-scenes guy.
Is Ring of Honor considering bringing in Christian for a couple shows?
I mean, we'd love to have him. From what I understand, he's not really interested in doing a lot of indie dates.
Mm-hmm.
But we would definitely love to have him in if he wanted to do any shows.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, I want to thank you for being on. We're running out of time really quickly, and I want to tell everybody to go ahead and visit Ring of Honor at their website. Give it out.
ROHWrestling.com. Lots of sales, lots of new videos, and we have stuff from TNA, WWE, Japan. Lots more than ROH at ROHWrestling.com.
Excellent. Gabe, I want to thank you for being on the show. It's been a great interview.
Thank you very much.
You and the missus have a great holiday, and when are you coming back to Dayton?
Hopefully I'll see you at the end of January. We're back there on the 27th of January.
All right. You will definitely see me there. You have a great holiday.
Perfect.
Thanks for being on the show, man.
You too. Thank you very much.
Bye, Gabe.
Bye-bye.
All right, Gabe Sapolsky from Ring of Honor here on Wrestling Weekly. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back from TNA, we've got Terry Taylor coming up here on Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. We'll be right back after this. Doc Young, Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. On the line right now, our featured guest from TNA, does all that backstage stuff that I don't know anything about.
Neither.
His name's Terry Taylor. Terry, I want to thank you for being on the show.
That sounds
thank
pretty
you, Doc. Thank you, Doc. Doc Young, I'm Terry Young, and that's Les Young.
Yes.
Less young than the two of us. Sorry, Les.
Oh, man.
That's all
I love
right.
you.
That's all right.
Terry's on tonight, man.
Yeah, he's... I have a sense of humor. I can't fire him.
Shoot. So the first one around who hasn't.
How you been, Terry?
Never better. Life is stress-free and good.
Excellent.
All set for the holidays?
Yes, sir. I guess. I got to ask my wife. She does it.
Okay.
She even puts the stuff together in the middle of the night.
There's the person that gets the award, Doc, is a lady that puts up with him.
Yeah.
How many years have you been married?
Me?
Yes.
21.
Wow.
The same woman, not four different ones. Yeah, how long have you been married? Oh, I've been married 20 years. How many wives? Four?
Amazing. She's deaf, dumb, and blind.
She may be dumb. What up with me? And if anybody tells her I said that, I'll deny it.
Yeah.
Of course.
No, I got a great wife.
Will. Hey, what's your consensus of how things have gone thus far on Spike? I mean, you hear all sorts of different, you know, that they're basically happy with the ratings. Of course, the TNA people would like to see them come up, but I think it's going to take some time. I don't think you can rush it. What do you think?
I agree. We're a very, very small company in its infancy, and to have a clearance like Spike is huge for a company that's been around 3 years. We've made a lot of mistakes, but right now we are at the very, like a pivotal point to really start making a difference in our industry, and our company has a chance to really start doing well. I mean, making money, you know, doing the contracts where the guys don't have to worry about making a living anymore in the indies. I mean, there's some very, very strong indicators that show, you know, that we're going to start doing some really good things. We have a video game coming. We have toy, you know, the action figures. I mean, other revenue streams just besides TV, pay-per-view, and stuff like that. So it's very exciting.
I have some suggestions for your video game, so have your guys call me, and we'll get together.
Well, we'll have our people call your... Wait a minute. I am our people. Yeah, go ahead. I'll call you.
Well, he's in Mark, Terry.
Me too.
He's got a hell of a deal with it, believe me.
Less.
What?
To the interview.
Terry and I got to see each other back in October out in Tulsa and had a good time, actually.
It was good seeing Les. Les is really mellowed in his old age when he sees something he doesn't like.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a helmet, shoulder pads.
I was with some other guys who kind of speak their mind, Cornette and Pritchard.
Yeah, that's true. Jimmy's not scared. He'll never get an ulcer.
And Bill Watstop, talk about people speaking their mind. We got to visit with Cowboy Bill for a little while.
Yeah.
So it was fun. It really was.
Yeah, it was a good time. I had a great time seeing everybody.
Yep.
How do you feel like the pay-per-view went last Sunday?
I thought it went very, very well. And I think that Samoa Joe and AJ are, you know, that's kind of almost like the, I don't know, like the fingerprint our company is really looking, you know, to have as its identification as much as anything. As guys like those two kids to go out there and really perform. And honestly, Abyss and Sabu, for what it was, I don't think people understand, because those guys went into the barbed wire, how much, actually, what those guys went through to entertain the people.
Mm-hmm.
Sabu took a belly fly, you know, took that Tully Blanchard suplex onto the barbed wire from the floor. I don't know if you saw it or not, but, Abyss, there were two boards wrapped in barbed wire. At the end of the match, he was sandwiched between the two with Sabu sitting on his face.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
You want to talk about taking one for the team.
Well, both of them. I mean, Abyss
exactly.
had 16 stitches. Sabu wouldn't get stitched. He just glued himself, like
yeah.
always.
Yeah. He's got Dermabond now.
Well, I'm not sure if that... All going to do, Terry, is for those who run schools, is going to resurrect the scouts for the big, for you guys and for the big companies, is kids send you a bunch of hardcore stuff.
I mean, those guys really worked hard, and I appreciate what they did. But I think Les and I agree that there's a lot more talent involved with entertaining people,
yeah.
without run-ins, without chairs, without barbed wire, without going through a table. If you can get people to pay to watch you when it's you and another guy like AJ and Samoa Joe did, then you're on the right track.
You know what, I think, I've been watching Joe since Ring of Honor, really, the kid's you worked with him a while now, he's mentally far more mature than his years.
I don't even know how old he is. How old is he?
Mid-20s.
Incredible.
But he's got the mind of a guy in his mid-30s, I mean, as far as our business is concerned. Very stable, very centered, very focused, but he is your Steve Austin, if it's played right, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what would happen if he was undefeated all the way to Jeff Jarrett?
Yeah.
And then he had a match with Jeff.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm hoping for and looking for.
If Joe went into that undefeated and Jeff, like, either wouldn't give up and Joe wouldn't let go, you could have a double, turn, or at least have Jeff turn and have the sympathetic, you know, guy in his, you know, twilight trying to win the title back as a babyface.
Yeah.
Against this monster guy who's just overwhelming.
You know, I'm hearing some stuff backstage, and I didn't want to ask this until later in the interview, but there's this...
Yes, I was the Red Rooster.
No.
Oh, sorry.
There's this rumor going around backstage that the guys are, like, sneaking up behind each other and smacking each other in the face to pass time. Have you heard about this?
I can assure you we don't do that in the office.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've never heard anything about that.
Okay, supposedly David Young had to get his jaw realigned after Samoa Joe gave him a whack. It's like one of those joking type of, you know.
Like a Steiner thing. Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
I tease Joe about being stiff all the time, but I didn't realize it was that.
I know. Can't even play right.
I'm trying to think. Somebody, I saw David Young last night, and he told me who knocked his jaw out of whack, but I don't think it was Joe.
Mm.
It was somebody else, whoever he had a match with.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I just had to find out about that. We were talking about that earlier in the show. It's making the rounds as far as news. That's what's going on in the locker room. So.
Doc doesn't have a lot to do with his time during the day, Terry.
Right.
That's cool.
No, well, that's about it.
Our house needs cleaning. We need painting done.
So what are your thoughts on the hiring of Sting? Tell me about this.
I think that I'm conflicted. I think that as a big star and all that, at one time that, you know, I think the casual fan will remember Sting and that will help us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure how that helps us when we're trying to promote guys like Samoa Joe, AJ, Daniels, Alex Shelley. I'm just wondering how that blend is going to be. I'm optimistic, but sometimes when you're, it's almost like to me maybe you shouldn't always go back. But I do think that Sting, his name will bring people that don't really know much about wrestling. They'll go, Sting? Well, I've heard of him. And if that gets them to turn the channel and see our product, then it was a good investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea. And I know that's what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be the devil's advocate here, too, and say that Sting is not a maker of change. He's not a Ric Flair. There are certain guys that elevate everybody's game. He can elevate his own game if he does. I'll be the devil's advocate. But if he doesn't, then it's a short-term fix at very best.
I've heard that too, Les. But the one thing I think, and I do know this, that some people thought that if Sting came in for short-term, it would be something, you know, that he did for him. But he's committed to work a full schedule for a full year.
Well, then.
So, I think that's good for us, and I think it's a good indication that he wants to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he insisted on working a full schedule. So that's, I think that's encouraging, and I think that that'll really help us when he gets going and he kind of finds his groove and all that. He hasn't been around the business in a while.
I know.
He has no idea what he's getting into. He has no idea about our locker room. We got a great locker room. I mean, we got great guys. The office is kind of iffy, but, oh, wait, I'm in there. But no, I mean.
You mentioned Alex Shelley. Listen, tell
Alex. Love him.
To save himself a lot of work and set his VCR.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a TiVo, but he doesn't know how to figure it out yet. You'll see why we have him doing that camera. It's really a good idea.
I hope so, because you know me and logic.
Yeah, you got to forget all that, Les.
You got to get into the moment, Les.
Yeah, drink some NyQuil, kind of get hammered, and then watch it. It makes perfect sense.
Listen, speaking of getting hammered, I saw you try to cop the beer off of James Storm in the interview. I said, yeah, okay, there's no typecasting again.
That was for you, Les.
That was awesome.
I told everybody I quit drinking. I figured, well, I'll see who's paying attention. You'd be amazed how many people saw that.
Yeah.
Especially James.
We all noticed. I want to ask you the same question about Christian. I mean, how's Christian doing as far as TNA?
He's happy.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. He came in and he was like, you know, a little nervous about coming in because he was in the WWE. And no disrespect to WWE, but a lot of people, if they're not used to a certain way and all that, you can get beat up emotionally there. And he was kind of beat up emotionally. And his passion for the business has started to slip. And he is just a breath of fresh air, and he's excited, and he's offering to do things that most big stars don't want to do as far as helping other people. And, you know, he gets there early, and he stays till the end, and, you know, and he's pitching in, and it's just neat. It's fun to see somebody who's been around and who has that big-time experience. 8 years on WWE, I mean, you got to give it to them. They're a great television company, and they know TV production, mm-hmm. and so does their talent, and he brings that with him. So that helps us, too, because he can help, you know, orchestrate things to get people to where they're not, you know, their backs aren't to the camera and that they speak, you know. It's just there's a lot more to do in wrestling television or television wrestling, depending on how you want to say it, than people think.
How do you think the Ring of Glory show went? You were over there, right?
Yes.
How did that go?
It was good. We you know, it was just... It's funny when, you know, it's just like a small wrestling promotion thing, but guys come in there for the right reasons. They do it because they believe in what they're doing or because they care about Vince or whatever the reason is. It's never the money, mm-hmm. and the performances are good. And I don't really get a chance to see a lot of it because, you know, I'm with the lighting people, the music people, and they've never done anything like this. So we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants, but it was good. And I think that the DVD will be very, very good when it's, you know, edited down and made into probably an hour 45 or maybe an hour and a half. But I think it'll be very, very good.
Good.
Let me ask you a quick question here. Are there really any plans to do house shows at all next year?
Yes, sir.
Is there?
Yeah, we're actually contacting promoters around the country to see if they'll partner up with us to help us promote. Instead of having our own in-house promotion, we'll have, you know, somebody in charge of that, but they will contact different promoters throughout the country and partner up with those promoters, where the promoters will get, you know, we'll help them and they'll help us as far as the advertising and you know, it's just a grassroots promotion. And plus, we may be doing some stuff overseas.
Oh, good.
We're beating WWE over in Korea. We're on the better station with more people watching, and China's wide open.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we're a baby company with about, you know, 20 people in the office wearing 94 hats each.
Mm-hmm.
And before we start hiring, you know, beyond our means, you know, we just started getting money coming in, and we're really getting things, a good foundation in place. So as we grow, you know, we'll be ready for it.
Have you been keeping up on the competition, WWE's product?
Honestly, I have not.
No? That's not good, Terry. They're not going to like that in the office.
Who, WWE? I don't care. What are they going to do, fire me again? I'm never going back, so I can say what I want. I know I'm never going back. They won't have me, and I won't go.
I'm not going to get into that. I was going to say, what is that all about?
It's compelling. No, well, they don't want me, and I don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I have some friends that work there, but they drain the life out of you. There's no passion there. It's a bunch of people that are making a paycheck, and I don't want to be around that. I want to be around people that are excited about what they do, that are young, and that love the business and aren't saying, you know what, you know, we're going to beat you down and make you hollow inside so we can do what we want with you.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to be full of life and have passion and be excited and come to work happy that they're doing what they're doing. And that's exactly what we have right now. And I wouldn't leave this for $200,000 a year for the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
I'm happy, and I don't ever want to be unhappy again. And I was unhappy there last time I went. Very unhappy.
And he likes being around young people. That's why he likes hanging around me.
That's right. Do you know that the first time I ever locked up with Les, he said he's had easier finishes than my lockup? True or false, Les? I locked up with him, and he said, my gosh, are you trying to kill me? I went, what? I didn't know that you weren't supposed to, like, get in there.
I said, this is work. I didn't know what I told
you. What's that mean? I've been in the business 25 minutes. Work. I mean, it's not real. Bugsy McGraw kicked me as hard as he could for 4 minutes in my first match. He thought it was real.
Oh, but you turned into a hell of a worker, Taylor. I have to
give you Bugsy?
That. No, you did. No, not Bugsy. I might be able to get Bugsy compliments, but it won't be as a work.
You got the ball rolling last. You told me I didn't have to kill somebody with my lockup. So. That changed everything.
That was the most important thing that he learned.
Honestly, it is. Yeah. You lock up with somebody, they learn to trust you or they don't trust you right that second.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Les?
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Exactly.
Good point.
Back then, we didn't talk to each other before we went out. You know, we didn't. If I was going to wrestle Les, I may not see him, or I wouldn't see him until the referee says, okay, you over there and you over there, go.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be able to, you know, wing it.
Exactly.
Even on TV.
We were just talking about this earlier, which are the best matches, honestly.
I think so.
Yes.
If you can listen to the crowd, and I know it's hard on a four-minute TV match, but the guys are away from each other so much during the matches, it's hard for them to call anything. You know, we did a different style. I mean, we had to at least touch each other before we started running the ropes. These guys, now it's like blowing the whistle and then somebody just running full speed. It's like a sprint.
I know. I feel at the end of your show, and I just feel like I'm on speed.
I take a hit of speed and I take an aspirin. It's the only way I can keep up with it and not be aching at the end of it. These guys go 100. I mean, I love our guys. I tell them, slow down. This is a sightseeing tour, and you guys have got to pedal all the way to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, there's Rock Hudson's house. Woo, hey, there's Grand Canyon. Woo, hey, there's the Empire State Building. Woo, okay, we're done. Huh?
Is that by design?
Your girlfriend's better than that. Is all like.
Who? I'm at home with my wife and two children. Is somebody
no, not
you, girlfriend?
Rice. Those guys. Oh. They're not that quick and abrupt with them.
I have no girlfriend.
Is that pacing by design? Is that what TNA wants?
I know Spike says they like the total nonstop action thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we kind of planed out at a point eight, and we said if we don't get the people to understand who our characters are, which can't have just wrestling matches, they were very, very receptive to us starting to do more character development. Not a lot, where you know we're easing it in, where we're having where we're having a chance to at least get to know some of the characters, like Alex with the video camera, mm-hmm. and we're doing some stuff. I mean, Jeff does a lot of character stuff. But we're getting more stuff in there, too, like with the Road Dog and, you know, Three Live Crew and stuff like that. That Conan turn thing, I think, worked because we'd spent so much time on it.
Mm.
Yeah, that was 7 months in the making.
Yeah, it was classic booking as far as the turn and things like that.
Yeah, and some people say they saw it coming. I would defy somebody to tell me a week before the show they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
The day after, everybody knows it's coming. Nobody wants to be a wrestling fan or a mark. They don't want to get caught up in it. That's exactly what I do want.
An old-timer told me once, you always give them what they want. You just never give it to them when they expect it.
That's exactly right. That is what makes our business watchable, is people trying to guess what's going to happen. It's like CSI. I watch it. It's the most watched show on TV. I want to figure out who killed everybody. But I never figure it out right.
Mm-hmm.
But I like trying, and that's the same thing with wrestling. People want to try to figure out what's going to happen and who's going to do what to who and all that. And that's what you just got to throw them swerves. And honestly, the Internet's kind of ruined that because there's so much information. It's very hard to keep a secret now.
Yeah.
But the inside people are the ones that are making it bad because somebody wants either Wade Keller or Dave Meltzer to say something good about them. So they'll call up and say, hey, got a big heel turn coming up next week. Say something good about me.
Right.
I promise you they don't blister, being Meltzer and Wade Keller, they don't blister their sources. Or they don't have any.
Right.
So I should be getting knocked to the ground here in the next couple of weeks in the sheets. I certainly hope.
I have a question from the chat room for you.
Yes.
May MG, he wants to know, is Canyon going to be a regular on TNA now? Canyon.
Maybe.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I like Canyon.
There's going to be a lot of people that come through, some that stick and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's going to get rich with us in the beginning. We're a part-time company.
Right.
And a lot of guys that were in WCW, and I'm not talking about Canyon, but I'm talking about a lot of people think that they're going to come in here making $3,000 a week for 36 or 38 shows a year, and that's not going to happen. They're going to come in at a low wage, and they're going to fit in, and they're going to work hard, and then they'll earn their way up. Nobody comes in here making close to what they think they should be. Because if they think they, you know, we want people that want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get going, I mean, once people get here, like Christian, he's really happy to be here. And I don't mean to keep saying him. He's probably going to call me up and say, shut up. we do have a lot of, people are happy to be here. We don't have stress here. We have, we have a little bit of crap, but not much. Anytime you have a bunch of people, passionate about something, you're going to have a little bit of personality conflicts, but it's not bad. Nothing we haven't worked through.
Crusher Cox has a question. He says, do you think that the casual fans at Universal are hurting the product because they don't really follow the sport?
I'm not sure they're the casual fan. I think sometimes when you go to the same place every 2 weeks and the same people can come in, they kind of think they're part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose that reaction that would be genuine with somebody who's not always there. They see how we do it every week, the setup, the people walking around, the lighting. They're part of the show, too, now.
Yeah,
so, but like pay-per-view crowds, they're different. They come from all over the country, and you can see that they're different.
Let me throw this out here, Terry, and see what you think.
Yes, sir.
I think today you can't really bank on the crowd reaction, I mean, in terms of gauging what your product's doing so much as you could 20 years ago. And the reason I say that is fans today, to me, and I have no proof of this other than just it's a feeling, that they're more like a game show. I mean, you know, you watch Impact or you watch Raw or you watch SmackDown week after week, and finally you get a chance to go to Orlando or Raw or SmackDown shows up in your city, and, okay, by this time you know that when somebody does this, you know, when Kurt Angle's music plays, you say you suck. You know, when this guy right. does it, you know where I'm getting at?
Yeah, they're part of the show.
Yeah, and so they're going to react just because they're going to react. Not
yep.
necessarily because they're entertained or not entertained. I mean, something grossly boring or something, they may get into that. But I'm just saying, on an average, a lot of times they're reacting just because that's where they're supposed to say this or that.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true. They get in the same position in the same, you know. Like, you're right. It's the Kurt Henning or the Kurt Angle. I'm sorry, the Kurt Angle thing. It's true. They play that music, make people go, oh, yeah, we're going to go, you suck.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Shawn Michaels, they're cheering him, half of them, right?
Some of them booing Cena now.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people still choose. It's just the people that go to the TVs are conditioned to react a certain way to certain things.
Yeah.
That's what they've seen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you find that on these little indie shows, too, a lot of times, especially, well, not so much, let's say, in the smaller southeastern cities, but in the more urban areas, settings, you go to the indie shows, it's just a throw. I mean, that you know they watch Raw or SmackDown or Impact, you know, because
yep.
they come across, I mean, even if it doesn't fit the situation, you know, they have a chant or something going on.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, we got people at our thing chanting ECW and you effed up, or I don't say that, you say you messed up or holy, you know, crap, and
mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't think that's, when I was going to wrestling as a fan, we never said that stuff.
Right.
You know, everybody would say woo at Flair's chops because they ripped you in half, and now even if they're one of the lousiest chops in the history of the wrestling business, people go woo,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, that's true. I see girls hit each other,
yeah,
and the people go woo.
It's like, what are they wooing about?
They're conditioned to do it.
Yeah.
They think that's part of it, yeah. It makes them part of the show, though. It's almost like the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, exactly. Good analogy.
Yeah. Will TNA consider having a live Impact show for Primetime Special?
I think that we're working on it. I think everything that we do every week, production-wise, you know, and wrestling-wise, we're wanting to get. That's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because live is... Vince McMahon used to say, and I used to like, what? Because I was in production. He goes, nothing bad happens on live TV, because even if who was the guy who wore the Shockmaster, he walks through the wall and falls down and he's on his hands and knees looking for his head, while this big voice is going, I'm going to kill you. He's on his hands and knees looking for his head, and Flair's going, oh God, you know, that's good. I still talk about that today.
Yes.
That's not exactly what the guys who were in charge wanted to happen, but it's entertaining television.
Exactly.
So we just want, when we go out there, to be entertaining the right way.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting better. I don't think we're just ready yet.
Yeah. Here's a good question to end on. Crippler Benoit wants to know, will you be going full-time in the not-so-distant future?
What does that mean?
You said you were a part-time company.
Well, our guys work 3 days a month for us,
mm-hmm.
and they're allowed to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of our guys work with us. They work with Ring of Honor. A lot of our guys work Japan, too. And when I said earlier that they would, you know, work for us and that would be it, we're hoping that we can be big enough that we do go full-time,
mm-hmm.
that our talent works for us, and they don't have to go looking for employment anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank you, Terry, for being on the show. It's been an interesting interview. Yeah, you were on tonight, my friend.
I am always on when Les Fax is around, because otherwise he'll start beating me up
yes.
emotionally and verbally.
Oh, see?
I love you, Les.
Physically, I'm too old. I love you too, Terry.
You're like a younger brother to me.
My best to Miss Trudy and the family, and have a great holiday, and God bless you, my friend.
Thank you. Same to you and your family. You're a good man, and there aren't many of us left. Doc, thank you, and I'll see you around campus.
Okay, will do.
Good night, everybody. Have a great holiday.
Bye, Terry.
Bye.
Terry Taylor here on Wrestling Weekly. That's going to about wrap things up. I want to remind everybody that we are taking the next 2 weeks off for Christmas and New Year's Day. We are not going to have shows. We'll be back on January 8th with our year-end wrap-up.
Yeah, we're
going
to try and have Bruce Mitchell, Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, Pete, the whole cast of columnists that usually do Hot Topic with us on to review, you know, give us their highs and lows for the last or for this year. And again, for myself, thank you so much for being a fan of Wrestling Weekly. To you guys in the UK, man, thanks for jumping across the big muddy to join us. And happy holidays to all of you. Take care. God bless.
I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll see you again in 2006. It's been great, guys. It's been a great 2005 for us, and hopefully 2006 will be better. Don't forget to check out what Les is up to every week at lesthatcher.com and epwt.com. That's the Elite Pro Wrestling Training Seminars. Also, want to thank WrestleTalk Radio for their help tonight. Also want to thank our networks, WrestlingMediaNetwork.com and WrestlingRadio.net. And don't forget, of course, to check out ObsessedWithWrestling.com. They have it all over there at ObsessedWithWrestling.com. We'll see you guys in 2006. You have a great holiday. Stay safe. We're out of here. For Les Thatcher, I'm Doc Young. Good night.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us again next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern right here on WrestlingWeekly.com.